So we're going to speak to Eilis Ryan, who is from the Workers' Party, one of Dublin's newly proposed built student schemes. Is renting out rooms apparently for €170 a night for the Pope's visit. That's this weekend, so the World Meeting of Families. We were joined by Eilis on the line, who says that it's a breach of their planning permission by doing this. Eilis, lovely to talk to you.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, good. So, are they actually in breach of their planning permission by renting out at all, or is it just €170 a night that they're in breach?
The planning permission, which student accommodation providers get when they get permission to build, says that the accommodation can only be used for the purpose of providing student accommodation. And because this particular development, it says very clearly in the planning that if they want to use it for any other purpose, they have to apply for a change of use. They didn't do that, and as a result, they are in breach of planning by leasing the accommodation to anybody other than students.
Okay, so so if they did apply for the planning permission, they may get it, and then it wouldn't be in breach of it. Is that what you're saying?
If they apply for change of use, okay, it's possible that they will be granted it. But one of the things that I'm saying is that that shouldn't be given to these student accommodation providers, because there are many students who need accommodation right through the summer. So at the moment, what we see is that an awful lot of students are evicted from their current accommodation come summertime, and they have to find somewhere else to live for those couple of months before going back into student accommodation in the autumn. And I don't really see any rationale for this. Everybody else has a need for housing year-round, and so do students.
Okay, but what about the students who, say, go home for the summer or go on J1s? Should that accommodation be left vacant, or do you think that there's a way that they could rent that out to people?
Well, my view is that there would be plenty of students, given the housing shortage at the moment, who would prefer to keep their accommodation over the summer months if it was decent and affordable accommodation. One of the problems with these particular complexes is that it's not at all affordable. The rooms that they're renting out are rented to students at around €1,000 a month just for one bedroom. So I think part of the problem is that it's being geared towards people who aren't traditional students coming out of school, going into a degree and on a limited budget. It's being geared towards, for example, people coming to Ireland to do a very expensive one-year master's course who've maybe borrowed an awful lot of money to pay for fees and accommodation, or perhaps it's geared towards English language students who are only here for very short periods of time. So I guess this is just one more example of why the student purpose-built student accommodation that's going up all over the city is a very bad development for the city.
So it's not really purpose-built. I can't imagine paying €1,000 a month when you're in university or in college, even doing a master's. So the people who are renting these out, they're probably more likely to have come from abroad, as you said there. And what about is the accommodation full, or are there Irish students or students who are going to university for the first time straight out of school who are renting that accommodation and paying €1,000 a month?
Yeah, so I think that, as you said, I mean, it's called purpose-built student accommodation, but actually, if you think when it was first being proposed, one of the things the Workers' Party proposed is that there should be an affordability clause in the planning permission. So it would state that rent would be capped at a certain amount to ensure that it was affordable for students. Unfortunately, that hasn't happened. And we see these student accommodation developments now are charging rents that are completely unaffordable to the vast majority of students. So on the one hand, the planning permission is being granted because there's a crisis of student housing. And on the other hand, the actual accommodation that's built, because it's so unaffordable, is totally unsuitable and isn't actually doing anything to alleviate the housing crisis for students.
Why is it that we can build student accommodation but we can't build local, social, affordable housing?
So most of the accommodation for students, most of the funding for these types of developments is coming from overseas. And it's big investors, like some of the biggest investors in the world who are investing in it. And they're doing it because it's considered to be a very safe bet. So there is a market for affordable kind of luxury student accommodation out there. And that's really what these investors are investing their money in. So there's basically, there's a guaranteed profit margin for these international investors. And because that's the only thing that's determining what gets built, basically what's going to make the most money, we're seeing these kinds of developments going up all over the city. If we want to have something other than profit determining what's going to be built, then, you know, the state needs to start taking a bit more of a role in deciding, well, on this particular plot of land, we want to see social housing, not student housing, and figuring out how to fund that. But it doesn't take that kind of proactive role at all. It just allows developers to snap up plots of land and build whatever is most profitable on them with almost no restrictions. So in Ireland, we don't really have an ability to plan what gets built in our cities.
Okay, just back to the homelessness crisis, I suppose, as well. And do you think that the people who are renting the accommodation out in Dublin this weekend for the World Meeting of Families should be evicted from this accommodation, or should the landlords be penalised? What way should they deal with it? Because I suppose over the last week we've seen evictions from vacant housing in the city, and a new occupation of another building that's been laying vacant as well.
I think the major problem in terms of homeless families in the Pope's visit is that most of the accommodation for homeless families is being provided in the private sector. So private hotels that have absolutely no obligation to the state whatsoever are providing accommodation to very vulnerable homeless families. And that means whenever there's a major event, whether it's a football match or whether it's a big conference or the Pope's visit, when there's a big event like that, homeless families are evicted. And that's the real difficulty here, is that as long as we rely on the private sector to provide accommodation for people who are homeless, we're not going to be able to determine the quality or the security of it.
So just to mention on the quality, you said in another statement there that the building in question in that the occupation last week was a site of a series of illegal evictions that took place in May. As far as I'm concerned, the tenants continue to have a legal right to live there, and activists have every right to protect this. I know this is going a little bit off topic, but were the tenants who were evicted actually in the building with the people who were occupying the building last week?
I'm actually not totally certain, because there wasn't any kind of permanent residence in the building. There was an awful lot of different people involved in holding the building. So the tenants were certainly supportive of what we did and were kind of coming and going to offer their support.
Okay. And you were saying that Dublin City Council should purchase these buildings and buildings around Dublin that maybe went into receivership a few years ago and make them into social housing. Would that be one of the buildings that you would say to be bought?
Absolutely. I think if you look around, particularly the inner city in Dublin, there are lots of 3-4 storey old buildings that used to be divided into very inadequate bedsits. And we tightened up on the regulations and said that people couldn't let out bedsits anymore, which is totally appropriate. But what we didn't do is force landlords to make improvements so that people could continue to live in those buildings. So in many instances, the landlord who had been making money off these buildings for decades just evicted the tenants and then went about boarding the buildings up. And I think a lot of them are just basically waiting for property prices to rise high enough so that they can sell them. So this seems grossly unfair to me, that a landlord was letting substandard accommodation for decades, made lots of money out of it, decided to evict tenants, leave the buildings empty, and now they're able to simply sell those buildings and make huge profits off it. And in my view, it would be much more appropriate for the state to take ownership of those buildings and convert them into appropriately sized family homes. In many of them, you could get 2 or 3 good-sized apartments in one of those old buildings. And that would massively increase the supply of public housing in the inner city.
Is land hoarding illegal, Eilish?
No, not at all, no. So there's a marginal tax on land which is found to be left vacant without any activity. But that tax is quite small, and because the price of land is increasing so quickly, it often makes more sense for a developer to simply avoid paying, to simply leave the land vacant and pay the tax, because in the long term, by sitting on it, they'll still end up making more money. So it's not really a disincentive to allowing land to sit vacant. And then buildings being left vacant, there's absolutely no regulation around at all. You can leave a building vacant for as long as you want, as long as it's boarded up.
Okay, and that's just back to the North Frederick Street building that's being occupied at the minute. That's actually owned by an insurance company, apparently, and that was previously went into receivership in 2015. Do you have any idea what the intention of that building was for the insurance company or by the insurance company?
I just kind of assume that in most cases the intention is to do whatever will make the most money out of it. That's generally how private companies tend to operate. They do whatever will make the most money. And at the moment, because property prices are going up, it makes sense for them to hold on to a building, leave it empty in spite of a housing crisis, and then sell it for profit in a couple of years' time.
Okay, and what about the flats on Dominic Street? Is there any sign in them being refurbished at all?
The flats on Dominic Street are designated for regeneration. So they are currently being de-tenanted, which means the tenants are being moved out, and new apartments will be built across the road to replace them. It's been an incredibly slow process, and it involves kind of private development as well as public. And I think it's a really good example of why that development was already kind of planned before I was elected to council in 2014. And it's barely progressed. And I think that it's really an example of why getting the private sector involved rarely makes anything simpler or cheaper. And that really that development, as the state had simply decided it was going to rebuild that housing, that development could have been done in a much, much faster fashion.
So the ultimate remedy for this would be for Dublin City Council to take on those buildings, refurbish them in a timely manner and get them back out that people who are living on the streets right now can move into them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you could with all of the vacant property around and with all of the vacant land around, what we need is for the state to, you know, set up a public company that's capable of managing large building projects, get financing in exactly the same way that a private company would, except with the difference that instead of making profit off it, the objective of all of that new housing is just to provide homes for people. And that would include people who are currently on the streets, people in emergency accommodation, but also the many, many people who are in full-time employment and have absolutely no hope of getting secure and affordable accommodation anytime soon. People who are left at the mercy of landlords who can evict them at the drop of a hat with very, very little restrictions. I think that, you know, all of those people are in need of accommodation and all of them have a right to be housed by the state.
Is there any light at the end of this tunnel? Have you any confidence in Minister Owen Murphy?
No, not at all. I mean, I don't think the government has any intention of doing anything. As people well know, there's a huge percentage of TDs who are landlords, and that is basically one of the major factors that drives their policies, as well as the fact that they are so reliant on major international investment funds to prop up the housing market. So we saw last week, for example, that IRES, which is an investment trust, who are currently Ireland's biggest landlord, they own the most properties of any landlord, they received €19 million off the state in rent subsidies over the last year. And so the government is basically dependent on these kinds of large international investment trusts to provide housing because they are not willing to provide it themselves. So I don't think any solution is going to come through that government. I do think that where there is hope is the fact that people are angry and mobilised, and I think there is more support for public housing and a public solution to the housing crisis than there has been in a generation. or more. And I think that's where we have to focus our energy, is in, I suppose, gathering as many people as possible around the idea of public housing for everybody, including people who are working, including people who aren't working, and building pressure so that it's no longer possible for Fine Gael to simply ignore the housing crisis.
I suppose it doesn't help either that 33% of our TDs are landlords as well. Do you think that if you become a TD, you should have to maybe give up your property or sell your property on?
I think in every other area of life, it's totally normal that if you have a conflict of interest, you have to step aside. So if you're sitting on a board of a private company and they're taking a decision about something where you have a stake in the decision being taken, a personal financial stake, you have to step aside and not be involved in that decision. And I think that something similar in the state makes perfect sense. I also think, though, that, you know, 33% of the population aren't landlords. And it just goes to show how elitist our government is, that that's the number of landlords we have in the government. It goes to show that the government isn't very representative of ordinary working class people, and that there's a huge, huge gap between them and the people. I would suspect that even if they had given up their properties, they would still be voting in a similar manner, voting to protect private interests rather than public good. And really what we need is a different government, not just a new set of rules.
Okay, Eilish, lovely to talk to you. How can people voice their concerns about this? Is there any way that they can somehow be involved in?
Yeah, well, there's a Facebook page called the Summerhill Occupation. If people go onto that, they'll find a form where they can sign up to get involved in the current occupation. The Campaign for Public Housing is another national campaign working for public housing. And again, there's a sign-up page on the Facebook page for the Campaign for Public Housing where people can get involved also.
Brilliant. Okay, it was lovely to talk to you, Eilish. Good luck with everything and keep going. Thanks a million.
Thanks a million.
Bye. Bye. Bye.